This is KPTZ 91.9, Port Townsend. I'm Heather McRae-Wolf, and you are listening to The Heart of Learning, a community conversation about education. Today, I am speaking with Lisa Cartwright, math coach in the Port Townsend School District for grades K through 5. And I would like to dedicate today's show to my father, Bill Wolf, who was a mathematician and a passionate advocate for math education. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
To start with, if you could just explain a little bit about your current position and sort of what you do and how long you've been working with the school district.
Yes, I think as in many districts, reading was given a lot of emphasis in the past couple decades. And with the advent of the Common Core State Standards that came in 2012, a lot of districts were looking at their math programs and saying, wow, we could really beef up here. Perhaps we need new materials or something. So two principals here in town in 2014 decided that they would create a math coach position. And so it's really a position to support not only students, but students through the support of teachers. And so I do a lot of work with teachers around our instruction.
Can you give us a sense of what a sample day is for you?
So a sample day for me is very varied. Again, I'm between two schools, Grant Street Elementary and Blue Heron, and my favorite part of my work is when I can be in classrooms and support teachers in working with students. Sometimes I go in and actually work with some students with teachers. We might team teach a lesson together, or a teacher might come ask me to come in and just watch a group of her students whom she's wondering, he or she is wondering how they're accessing the math curriculum. The other things I do are very much more behind the scenes, so I'm kind of a support there for all materials. If teachers need additional materials for the math program, I can order those for them. I do a lot of work around our online programs. We do have students on an online math program, pretty much K-5. Actually, a couple of different programs. And I'll be watching how the students are working on those and what kind of lessons they're doing. Teachers may ask me to actually target some lessons to go along with classroom instruction. So I'm kind of administrative, but also, again, my favorite part is being in rooms. So,
got it. Yeah. And can you talk a little bit about how you became a math coach, what your path was to being a math teacher, math expert, and a math coach?
Well, I've always loved math, and I remember as a kid that math came quite easily for me. So while I do believe everyone has a math brain, it was something I was drawn to. I can actually remember laying in bed at night and doubling numbers with my brother at a pretty early age. He probably had me do that, but maybe it helped us fall asleep. I don't remember. We would get up to, like, you know, 256 or something, and then we'd always stop. So that was it. But I just remember loving numbers from an early age. And I actually had a first career for 10 years in outdoor education. So I did a lot of work in the parks and recreation field, and then got my teaching license and started teaching. Again, I was an elementary school teacher, so I taught everything and loved math, but also science, but really enjoyed it all. And then, you know, in the early 90s or mid 90s, some of the reform efforts started in our state, in Washington State, around math. And they were working towards having new standards in the new, millennium, I guess we call it. The state itself started offering leadership opportunities for teachers. And I kind of, you know, locked onto that. And one thing led to another. And pretty soon I was, during the old WASL years, I would help score tests. I would help create test items.
And so for our listeners who might not know what the WASL is, can you explain what the WASL is?
So it's an old name for our state assessment. It was the Washington Assessment of Student Learning.
Thank you.
And so this was in the probably late 90s, early after the turn of the century. And they had many opportunities to involve teachers in that process. So my leadership just began or continued to grow in that way. And I just found that I loved it. And at one point in my career, I thought about maybe getting my administrative credentials so I might become a principal. But that didn't happen. I think at the time my kids were young and I didn't want to go back to school full time.
Right.
So I just kind of latched onto the math and kept, learning myself on our pedagogy, which is how we teach math. And that's just taken a lot of strides in the last, 20 years or so. How we have students learn math today is not at all like many of us of my age learned math. And that's been an enjoyable journey for me.
And following up on that idea, I feel like I and other parents that I know have said that exact thing, like the way our kids are learning math feels very different than how we might have learned math. So can you talk a little bit more, explain a little bit more in detail what that is, how that worked?
Sure. You know, one thing I like to say is it's not that our pencil paper math has gone away. We still do want children to know their times tables, to be able to add and subtract multi-digit numbers, larger numbers. But embedded in that is we really want children to grow up having more of an experience with our number system. So starting even in kindergarten, we work a lot around the number 5, and then we move to 10, of course, and then 100 and beyond. But we're asking kids to become flexible with how they think about math. So going back to the kindergarten example, they start with 5, and they want kids to really understand that 1 and 4 is 5, 2 and 3, 3 and 2, of course. And we have visual models nowadays, too, that help kids, particularly if they're visual learners, to see those numbers and to become quick at knowing those combinations. And when you think about it, as we move up to the combinations of 10, if you know your combinations of 10 very quickly, thoroughly, I have to do it correctly here, 3 and 7, 6 and 4, it's not much of a stretch then to know 30 plus 70 and 60 plus 40.
Right.
And so I think that what the research found over the last 20, 25 years is that kids were getting stuck in their math because they didn't have a good concept, a good visualization of the number system. And really that's the basis of everything that we do in mathematics. So it will look very different to parents. There's going to be 10 frames or number lines that kids are jumping along. And it looks foreign to us, but it's all around getting kids to understand the meanings of numbers so that when they get up into larger numbers and more abstract concepts, they have that foundation.
And can you explain a little bit in that the role of manipulatives? I know that you can see many different kinds of manipulatives depending on a classroom that you walk into, and parents are sometimes trying to get manipulatives to have at home. So can you talk a little bit about those tools?
Generally, I consider a manipulative anything that you would put in a child's hands in order to work through a math problem. So you think about very young children, they have blocks in their hands or something that they're actually counting. As kids age, and of course we want to move them to the abstract. And when I say abstract, I mean pencil paper. So to know that what 32 means on a piece of paper and to be able to add it to another number. We want to get them to that point. But a manipulative will help them in the younger grades to, again, understand what 32 is. So we have things called, place value materials. So they might be a rod of 10. We have ones and then we have tens and then we'll have a square block that's 100 pieces glued together, basically. So that's a manipulative that helps children conceptualize and visualize that number, and they can handle it. And oftentimes manipulatives are made so they can be broken apart, so kids can actually break the number apart. And different children might break it apart in different ways, which is perfectly valid. Really manipulatives are kind of to help respond to kids' learning too, and to give them a tool that helps them see what it is that they're doing in front of them. So even drawing a number line, we have a lot of children now, in our classrooms, who will jump along a number line. If they're adding, I'll stick with 32. 32 and, I better make it simple so I can remember here, 32 and 42. They may take the 30, and they've learned to break apart 42 into tens and ones. So they'll go 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, and then they know they have 2 and 2 to add on. The answer is 74. Or they might start on 32 and go 42, 52, 62. Did I go far enough before? I'm not sure I did. Oh, yeah, I did. 72, that's right. And 2 more is 74. I'm trying to do this from memory.
You're not drawing
but
a number
I'm not
line.
Drawing the line here.
Right.
But again, it's just any way, anything. And, you know, so really a manipulative can be a pencil and a piece of paper if they're taught to draw the models that help them see the numbers.
And there's something about that tactile experience, mm-hmm. too, right? Particularly for young kids, like getting your hands on, which leads me to another question. I mean, you had mentioned some online programs that you work with and that mm-hmm. kids are working with. And I'm curious what your thoughts are about the role of online tools versus the hands-on right. physical tools for kids. I mean, a lot mm-hmm. of what you're describing, there are programs that do that online, but right. you're not putting your hands on it in the same way, and instead a kid is in front of a screen. And so what do you think about the role of that in yeah. the early grades?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly something to think about. And yeah. we live in a technological world, so yeah. I don't think we're ever going to get away from kids and technology in mathematics. Mm-hmm. My personal opinion, professional opinion, would be that it should never take the place of having a teacher in a classroom and concrete manipulatives mm-hmm. that children are working with. Because, again, we want to hit all their modalities. We do have students who, with an online program, they might not catch the actual mathematical concepts mm-hmm. because it's on a flat screen, you know, even if things are moving. But to get it hands-on where they can actually move something along a number line would right. make sense to them. So, you know, I think it's safe to say in our public schools here in Port Townsend that first and foremost, we're trying to make sure that every child has access to good quality, grade level instruction in mathematics. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, technology may be a supplemental program. We do have a couple programs that we use here in the district for different grade levels. But that's not something that's teaching them their math. You know, what we try and look for in a program is one that models the mathematics curriculum that we're teaching in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So kids aren't getting thrown too many different things, you know, and we don't want them confused. So if you can find an online program that supports the same sort of hands-on models that kids are using in the classroom, then we figure that's a bit of a win-win.
Right.
The other thing we run into, really, with online programs is we don't have a lot of time during the day to put kids onto computers. It can be a great tool to have a good program where a teacher can have part of a class on the program for 20 minutes while that teacher works with a smaller group of students. Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen. My theory is we don't want to go overboard, but a reasonable amount that supports what they're doing in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly motivational.
Right.
Actually, yesterday we were trying some kindergartners on an online program. And, you know, they're very technological, even at 5 and 6. Sometimes I think they know more than I do.
Right.
In how to operate around the screen. And we had to tell them that the little laptops they were on were not touch screens because they're used to iPads. And
grabbing their parents' smartphones.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, I mean, they're right there. And the reason I brought that up is they were so motivated. I saw a little boy in the hallway this morning, and he said, "I know you. You had us on the computers yesterday." And so it is motivational and exciting. But again, we have to keep it within reason.
Yeah. I'm wondering, a couple other topics have occurred to me around math education. And one is sort of the gender disparity that is often discussed in the math and science realm, and sort of whether boys and girls are receiving the same level of instruction even and achieving at the same level. So I'm just curious your experience over the years of your work in mathematics, what you've seen and what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah. I wish I could say I could remember everything clearly 25 years ago when I started in the classroom. But I do feel over my 25 years in the classroom that it is something that we've been watching, of course, and that my sense is that it was fairly even once we were aware of it, you know, and really. But what's interesting, I know I had a former principal years ago who would come in. He'd pop in any time of the day just when you were, you know, teaching, questioning kids, and he would just do a quick tally of how many boys, how many girls were called on. And sometimes that was very enlightening because sometimes it was lopsided, either one way or the other. And you had no idea, you know, as a teacher that that's what was happening for that moment in time. And we have to remember that didn't mean that was the way it always was. But because we're so into equity, boys and girls are in our math classrooms, you know, getting the same instruction. I think one thing that's helpful is, again, in our technological world, we do some assessment online now, is paying attention to the data that comes out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think data can be overdone, but data can give us some good insights, and you can break it out by boys or girls to see if you are getting different scores, you know, in a computer if you're doing your assessment on a computer. And that's mostly for the older children, third grade and up. We do some computerized assessing. So it's really something to watch. I mean, I haven't had a large sense that we're way out of whack. Like anything, you need to kind of drill down to the classroom level and working with teachers and looking at what's happening and making sure that you are equitable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I certainly have had a lot of girls who shine in math, and I know we do in this district, so and a lot of boys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you had mentioned a little bit earlier about how the Common Core state standards have changed the focus somewhat. Could you say some about how that might have affected what is happening in the classroom in the last just, you know,
sure.
very few years?
Mm-hmm. We were very lucky in Washington because I think it was in 2008 that Washington came up with their own math standards. And they were very progressive at the time, is my memory. And in 2012, when the Common Core state standards came out and 40-some states adopted them, there really weren't huge differences for us here in Washington State between our 08 standards and the ones that came out in 2012. So it wasn't a big shift. So actually, our shift began earlier in the state. But I think one of the big things around the Common Core, they lay out the skills and the concepts that children should learn. But they also have something called the mathematical practices. Mm-hmm. And these are those things that are more qualitative and really goes to the heart of how teaching mathematics has changed. We really put an emphasis now on children communicating their understanding of the mathematics that they're learning. So that whole discourse piece where kids are talking to each other, of course, teachers are talking to children as well, but being able to show and to communicate, to justify. Another piece of the mathematics that we have now that really makes me excited is because we know that math is about getting correct answers. No one's going to argue that we do not need correct answers when that's called for. But in the course of teaching children about the number system and getting that mathematics in their toolkit, we can allow them to look at problems differently. Just the one I had earlier with the two-digit numbers I was adding, children will come up with multiple ways because our brains work in different ways. And if a child wants to do their add their tens and then their ones or combine them and do it differently, nowadays we can say that's not the crucial piece. You know, what's really crucial is that they understand when they're correct and they can justify what they've done.
And talk about it.
And
right.
talk about it, yeah.
I'm Heather McRae-Wolf, and you are listening to The Heart of Learning, a community conversation about education on KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend. And I am speaking with Lisa Cartwright, math coach in the Port Townsend School District for grades K to 5. Lisa, I know one of the things that you've been working with lately has been the new Maritime Discovery Schools initiative, which is a place-based education initiative in the schools. And my understanding is you've been working to integrate math into that initiative. So can you talk a little
sure.
bit about that?
Yeah. Oh, that's – I moved to Port Townsend in 2014 and quickly learned about our Maritime Discovery Schools initiative and was so excited about that because math is a natural integrator into all disciplines. But it's tricky because – and any teacher will tell you this is the dilemma we face – we do need to have good, concrete instruction around skills and concepts so that children learn their mathematics. But to come into a district like Port Townsend and be free to look at what's going on with other disciplines, other projects in the classroom, maritime or otherwise, and I'll talk about maritime in just a minute, but I mean, that is a dream come true, you know, to be able to be asked to think about mathematics and science or mathematics and social studies, and to find those intersections so that kids can have real-world experiences with mathematics, because that's what's missing if we only drill down and teach skills and concepts every single day.
Mm-hmm.
What I love, I learned when I came that maritime is a much broader term than I thought. You know, I think of maritime, I think, oh, a sailing ship, and maritime really refers to our peninsula here. It refers to not only the water, but the land. So, you know, we have our kindergartners and our first and second graders learning about the environment they live in. So they may be down at Kai Tai. So I'm always talking to teachers and trying to see where are some intersection points with projects you may have going on, with field trips you have going on, where there might be a simple tweak and we can bolster the mathematics the kids are doing, or perhaps we have a whole additional activity that we want to put in for children to have them apply more mathematics in a concrete way during some experience that they have going on.
And can you give an example in some of the maritime projects? So just some more examples of how is the math sort of woven in, or how could it be?
Right. Last year, we did a project in a couple first grade classes where they were into boat making. So if anyone's been down to the Wooden Boat Festival, you know the children make their wooden boats. And we made something similar. But the kids were actually, it was kind of a math-science combination project. They were actually looking at their sail design. And they had to measure and design their sails. And then they tested their boats. Of course, they created the whole system and tested them in a small pool and were able to go back and make design changes. But the mathematics in there was the measuring. So they were measuring, you know, how tall do they want their sail to be. And these are little first graders with their little rulers and things. So that's an example of one we did.
Sounds fun. Year.
Yeah, it was. It was. I wanted to mention, too, that a year ago, well, this we're in our year two, of an additional grant that funds teachers' work around math fluency. And fluency, I've come to believe, is really everything we do in mathematics with children nowadays, as far as teaching them mathematics. It means are we teaching them multiple strategies? Are they learning to be flexible with their numbers? But are they accurate? A grant was written to the McCarthy Dressman Education Foundation, and I combined the maritime program with math fluency, and I wrote it to support teachers. So we do something daily in our elementary classrooms called Number Talks. Actually, they're Number Corner. There's so many names for them, but we call it Number Corner. It's all around number and the calendar, and it brings in different concepts, and the kids are doing a lot of mental strategies around, you know, either adding or subtracting or multiplying numbers. So the grant was written around our Number Corner and our Math Maritime, and getting teachers to bolster their understanding of math fluency and kids. And so that's just given us an extra little pot of money to be able to, if teachers want to go observe each other or observe maritime projects in the schools, the fund supports getting a substitute for them to be out of their classrooms. And it also supports supplies. So with the first grade project, you know, we were able to get all the boats together.
And that's always such an important component, too, of seeing other education professionals doing their instruction so that you can get new ideas.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm thinking about parents who might be listening, and sort of myself as a parent, and trying to figure out how we weave mathematics into sort of daily life. So for you, as both a math educator and a parent and now a grandparent, how has your concept of math instruction affected how you parent, or like what's woven into your parenting, if anything?
Right. Well, I think I would tell parents, try not to be afraid of that new math that comes home. You know, become familiar with some of those models or the pages that are coming home. Once you look at it, it's foreign, but then it becomes comfortable. And I'm a big believer in just talking about numbers in the home. Whether it's counting pages in the book that you're reading, or how many pages have you read tonight, or, you know, I think of cooking, particularly
of course,
to support fractions. Cooking is the best thing you can probably do easily, well, at any age, but, you know, especially second and third grade on, when they're just in third grade, they're just getting introduced to those ideas of fractional amounts. And to have cooking as that model. There's a model right there. It doesn't have to be anything fancy from a publisher. It's, you know, measuring that 3 teaspoons equal a tablespoon. That's huge. Or that, you know, the quarter cup. How many quarter cups go into a cup? And if you're cooking, you know, that's easy just to experiment with that. But that's so important for children to have those experiences outside of the pencil paper sort of.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Math, it goes on.
Which leads me to back to, you had mentioned that you were an outdoor educator for a number of mm-hmm. years, sort of early on in your career. How do you see sort of outdoor education? I know the Maritime Discovery Schools Initiative has a lot of outdoor components to it. Mm-hmm. How do you see outdoor education and math instruction sort of merging, either in practice or ideally?
Right. That's a wide open question. That's a big one. And for the first time today, you've kind of made me pause here and think, okay, so how do we merge those? But, you know, there's so many things
you could do, right?
It's right. There's so many things you can do. And it kind of goes back to what I do with teachers if they're out hiking. Can I help support you? Are the kids even counting their paces? You know, uh-huh. with older kids, I used to do pacing in the classroom. So they would learn the approximate measurement of their stride. Uh-huh. And so it was very easy then. Most people are a 2 foot or a 3 foot stride, that would be 2 steps. And even children, of course, they're a little shorter leg, 2 steps would be 1 foot to 2 feet in stride.
Oh, probably. I see. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But then to be able to use that as a tool to measure something off. Mm. How far do you think it is from here to there? Or how tall do you think that tree is? Or a tree is on the ground. How long is that tree? They have mm-hmm. an easy tool to measure that off. That was one of my favorite things I did in fourth and fifth grade when I taught. And nice. I'd see kids out on the playground, you know, pacing around and measuring things. I really think it's about thinking of what's the activity and where's the opportunity for number.
Right.
It can be counting anything, mm-hmm. you know. And some experiences will lend themselves better than others, of course. Mm-hmm. But it really is just trying to find those intersections. Pretty quick, I'm going to be talking with our fourth and fifth grade teachers because they have the Lady Washington coming in this spring.
Right.
They wrote a grant through the Port Townsend Education Foundation and got funded through the foundation. And so all the kids are going to get a boat ride. And I'm at the point now where I need to look at the program that the Lady Washington itself is bringing in. And I want to support teachers in what sorts of activities might we do prior to the actual sailing trip. I don't want to duplicate the programming.
Right.
But are there other things we might do that would involve some math that would support and enrich the experience that the kids are going to have?
Exciting.
Yeah.
Do you get to go on the boat?
I do. I've asked. So I think I'm counted as a chaperone.
Oh, good. Yay. Yeah. Along the lines of outdoor education, I have in my head the vision of the new school that's being built, the new elementary school, and sort of that central courtyard area and the mm-hmm. idea that every classroom has access to the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is a question that I could ask anyone who's going to be at that new school, but how do you think that that's going to shift how instruction happens or what's happening in the classroom?
Right. Well, it's really exciting because within the courtyard, and the courtyard will be gated off during the day, so it's a secure space.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered to be part of the school. There's, of course, the courtyard, and then there are also covered areas.
Mm-hmm.
Those doors that lead into the courtyard, they've designed and are building small covered areas. So even in inclement weather, teachers can go out. I think what it's going to do is make a space that is so much more accessible, mm-hmm. just on a minute's notice for classrooms to be, you know, even if you're on the outside hall of the building, all you have to do is cross the hall and go straight through the door and you'll be inside that courtyard. So I imagine, and this is the sort of thing that makes me wish sometimes I was back in the classroom,
uh-huh.
because I just think there's all sorts of possibilities. And not, you know, I mean, obviously the connection to the outdoors, but for any subject area, I mean, even to be able to take your kids outside for an English lesson or a reading lesson, just that connection with being out of doors. And of course, that was an intentional design element that the whole process leading up to the school was so exciting to try and envision what we wanted in that building. If I were in the classroom, I'd be very excited right now.
Nice. Well, maybe it'll lead to some exciting coaching opportunities.
I'm sure it will.
Well, thank you, Lisa, for being with me today.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to The Heart of Learning, a community conversation about education. I'm Heather McRae-Wolf, and my guest has been Lisa Cartwright, math coach with the Port Townsend School District for grades K-5. The show is produced by Larry Stein with assistance from Jacob Brown. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.